David Jason as craggy-faced Detective Inspector William Edward Jack Frost. He wears a suit and tie, his wavy hair is grey and he has a moustache. Images of police officers on the streets. A touch of frost. A police medal, the muzzle of a shotgun. A body lies on the ground. Based on the characters created by R.D. Wingfield. Frost at a cell door. He smiles. Dead End, screenplay by David Gilman. D.I. Jack Frost opens a slatted blind in his office and peers out of the window. He closes the blind. He pulls the blind up abruptly, then lowers it again.
Time is moving on.
Oh, yeah.
D.S. George Toulon sits at a desk. Frost opens and closes the slats on the blind.
Jack, I'm trying to concentrate.
Frost frowns.
And using semaphore won't speed things up.
Look, I'm supposed to be in Mullet's office in a minute, and so is she.
Frost glances behind him.
Don't bother, I'll answer it. Frost.
A woman on the phone runs for a bus.
Gov, D.S. Marsh. My car's packed up.
Frost checks his watch.
And what is your estimated time of arrival?
I'm on the bus.
She gets on.
About 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
Frost scowls at the phone.
Why her? Why her? Of all the people, why is Mullet having her transferred here? Answer me that.
Produced by Martin Orty, directed by Roger Bamford. D.S. Annie Marsh, an attractive woman in her 40s, sits on the bus looking out of the window. The bus pulls up at a stop where a bunch of school kids are waiting. A group of girls get on, behind them is a group of boys. One boy, John, checks his phone. A boy behind him shoves him hard.
Oh, you've got his bags muck.
Oh, leave it out, Lewis.
Don't get gobby, mate.
You're a what, Palmer? You're going to talk me to death.
Oh, calm it down, Johnny boy.
Palmer grabs John's bag and chucks it into the road. John runs after it. A car skids to a halt just in time to avoid hitting John, who retrieves his bag and runs back towards the bus. The other boys have got onto the bus and it has already pulled away. John runs after it. From inside, the other boys see him and bang on the windows.
You're too slow, Jono!
You think that was clever, do you?
Yeah, it was a laugh. You've got to start the day with a laugh, babes.
Otherwise, you end up like miserable old sods.
Like this lot.
The driver ignores them. Palmer leans over an old man.
Wait, send me a bag, mate! Yeah.
Well, come on, give me a bag. He got there
left. Your hands off me! Police! Enough!
A boy hits Marsh in the face. The bus driver stops and gets out of his enclosure.
Come on, get off my bus. Come on, get off my bus.
Look what you did. This ain't ordinary coat, mate. It's my brother's.
Get off the bus.
Are you gonna make me? I'll get you for this. Shouldn't I?
Lewis snatches his badge. The driver grabs it back. The driver, who's pricked his thumb on the badge, pushes Lewis off. An old woman turns to Marsh.
A fat lot of good you were.
At the police station...
I don't want you at Denton. It's best you should know that from the start.
It wasn't my choice either.
Yeah, well, as long as we understand each other.
Oh, perfectly.
You cross me again and I'll boot your rear right back to where it came from.
In which case, I'll have to bring charges against you again. Gov.
Frost glares at Marsh. In a bus station, people line up by several doors. In one queue, an old woman, Linda, sighs. She spots the bus pulling up outside the door and leans forward to gawp at the driver. It's the same driver as earlier.
What are you doing here? What is he doing here?
She steps out of the queue.
Can't believe it. A murdering man is driving the bus.
He's in his 40s with receding hairline.
I'll let him out. You're not supposed to be here.
The man, Harrison, stares at Linda as he backs out of the bus station. Superintendent Mullet's office.
What happened to you this morning, Sergeant Marsh, is but a token of the harassment and fear gangs of youths have inflicted on innocent bystanders over recent months. For the next 4 weeks, I'm instigating Operation Self-Containment. Zero tolerance on the streets of Denton.
Operation Roundup, you should have called it. With a bit of branding with permanent dye, that wouldn't gone amiss either.
And someone stealing credit cards, which is another priority. Although we don't have any leads yet.
George and I are doing the rounds of known offenders, sir.
Denton and Operation Self-Containment will lead the way with due care and diligence. So, I'd like to welcome you, Sergeant Marsh, and we all look forward to working with you.
Thank you, sir.
Marsh leaves. Frost rolls his eyes.
I had no choice, Jack. She's an experienced officer and we need someone. Besides, she's leaving in a month's time to go into the private sector.
What a cushy security job, right? In a modern office, with loads of holidays and bags of money. God, why would anybody want to do that? Can't she go now?
Just live with it, Jack, and work with her. Let bygones be bygones.
In the corridor...
Right, I want you to clear George's desk while he and I do all the legwork.
I think I'm of more use to Mr. Mullet out of the office.
Except you're working for me now, and I want this desk cleared.
You know, you can go on scoring points all day long. It's not going to help.
Look, just do your job, will you, and keep this zipped.
God, you're never going to forget it, are you?
No, I'm not. I was suspended from duty because you blabbed about the case that I was working on.
15 years ago! And you jeopardised more than the case. You were cutting corners. You didn't follow procedure.
I got the results.
Yes, you risked an officer's life to get your result. You take shortcuts. You screw it up for everyone. Well, not for me. I'm not having your muddy paws messing up my career, thank you.
He falters, glowering.
George and I are going to be out of the office all day. Don't you start.
To Tulin.
The quicker we do this job, the sooner she does us all a favour and clears off to where the grass is greener.
A woman in her late 30s dries cutlery. A slightly chubby man comes in and eyes her gravely.
What's going on?
Your mum said she saw Harrison driving a bus.
A bus? He's in prison?
She's definite.
The man, Andy, strolls into the sitting room where Linda's waiting.
Hello, Mum. Sarah says that you think you saw Harrison.
Oh, Andy, I got such a shock. It was him. There was no mistake.
All right, look, don't go upsetting yourself. Look, you can stay here for a bit. I don't want you being on your own tonight. Well, I'll have a sniff around and see what I can find out, but I can't have been her mum. Honest, they'd have told us.
A dark-haired man in his 30s, Tony Wood, sits in a car watching a block of flats. He dials on his mobile. A woman sits on a toilet. She injects herself. After she's injected herself in the abdomen, she takes a deep breath and gets up to answer her phone.
Hello?
Sighing, she grabs her keys and coat and heads out. She's dressed in a navy blue uniform, her hair tied back.
Tony, I'm just on my way to work. Look, I've told you, there's no point phoning me no more.
I want to talk.
Woods watches her.
Where are you now?
I've got an extra shift.
Well, you didn't need overtime when I brought your gear.
It's over, Tony. Grow up. And I want my keys back.
The woman, Jessie, gets into her car, hangs up and drives away in her dark green polo. Woods hangs up too. He drives out of a side street nearby and follows in his car. At a bus depot, Andy's talking to a man in a suit.
I can't discuss employees with anyone.
The bloke's a convicted killer. I mean, do you not know what he did? He destroyed the lives of two families.
Mark Harrison came to us with a clean record 3 months ago. I know what happened. He didn't try and hide anything, and I need driving.
What, so you let him loose behind the wheel of your bloody bus?
Mr. Hill, please leave the depot before I call security. I know you must be upset, but it's out of my hands.
Oh, that's not right.
Andy shakes his head.
It's not.
Andy glances back as he leaves the depot past a bus that's being fixed. Jessie hurries into the depot.
Oh, am I still on tonight?
Do you want to be?
Yeah, I need the extra.
You're on tonight.
Great.
The manager lets Jessie into an office. At a garage, Tulin fills up the car.
Are you watching?
Frost's in the driver's seat.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I keep telling you, why don't you get a new pair of glasses? No, not yet. Go on. Oh, George, it's been a long day. And I've got a takeaway curry sitting in a microwave with my name on it. Can't you just fill it up?
You fill it up halfway, you get better economy. Half the weight of a full tank in a car makes for better fuel consumption. Now?
No, not yet. I don't know, what with you and Mullet? Oh, come on, that's it. That's good enough, yes.
The fuel gauge reads half a tank.
You could always take the seats out, that'd make it lighter.
And you could always walk.
Frost is stern-faced as Tulin heads into the garage. A man and a woman walk out.
You have no idea how to deal with people.
What? People like you? I don't need you telling me how to behave.
You're abrasive, you're insulting, you don't give a damn about anyone else's feelings. Get in the car!
They both get into a car.
So bloody embarrassing sometimes.
The woman gets out again. The man follows suit.
That's your answer to everything, is it? Run away, have a sulk!
Keep away from me. I'm walking.
You're not. You're coming with me. I'm going to sort this out once and for all.
The man drags her by the arm.
Said, leave me.
Shut up! Hey, get in the car!
Hey, come on. Calm down, you two. You're causing a scene.
Mind your own business. Who asked you to poke your nose in?
Just think about it for a minute, will you? If you carry on like this, the cashier will call the police, and that is when it gets complicated, all right?
So is you that misunderstands things.
That's so unfair.
Now, will you please, miss, will you calm down, please, or I will call the police?
The woman struts back to the car.
Go on, buzz off, the pair of you.
They both get back into the car. Frost watches over them as they drive off, his mouth downturned at the corners. Tulin comes back out of the garage. Frost shakes his head.
Jack?
What?
I thought you were washing the car. I've left the keys in the ignition. That's how cars get nicked.
Then you ought to be more careful then, shouldn't you?
At Andy's house, Linda watches TV on the sofa. John enters.
You can't hear that, can you?
Hello, Lovefoot.
He points at the telly, mouthing.
I might be going a bit deaf, but at least I haven't got water on the brain like some.
Next Olympic gold medalist, me.
You better be. The amount of time you spend at that swimming pool. I think it's the girls you're in training for. Never mind the gold medal.
Yeah, you're right. I have to beat them off left, right and centre.
You wish.
Yeah, I wish.
John studies Linda with a serious expression.
What is it, Gwen?
Linda smiles weakly. In the kitchen, Andy's wife Sarah's folding washing.
Harrison got out on appeal a year ago.
She stares at Andy.
They overturned his conviction.
And they never told us?
I phoned the solicitors. They said the court didn't have to.
What? It just walks back into everyone's life?
Yeah. I suppose. I don't know. I mean, that's not right, is it?
What about Bob Tresham? Did he know?
No. I phoned him. He can't believe it either. I mean, I think it's knocked him for six.
Well, I hate to think what it's going to do to your mum.
I'm going, Mum, Dad. See you later.
John heads out.
I'll have to go as well.
He takes his keys.
We won't let this rest, I promise you.
Sarah's wide-eyed with worry. John runs along a dark street on his mobile.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
Wait, Jono!
Hey, where'd you nick that?
Along the road, outside the pub. It's neat, isn't it? Come on, you plank, get in. We'll go for a bit of a burn, yeah? Have some fun.
No, I can't.
Come on!
No, I've got swim practice.
You lead the boring existence. It's time you stop playing Nemo and join the Sharks.
Palmer and Lewis speed away in the motor. The car drives round a little roundabout and pulls up again. John gets into the back. The car drives away. A bus pulls up on a dark street. Jesse helps an old woman off the bus, which Harrison's driving.
I'll mind the step there, love. There you go. Night then.
Jessie, who's conducting, ambles back past Harrison, smiling. She sits down and looks at her watch. She glances at Harrison to see if he's watching, then opens her bag and gets out a syringe. Unaware, Harrison munches on a chocolate bar by the wheel. Jessie injects herself in the arm, then puts her syringe away, and pulls down her sleeve.
That's it, Mark.
He puts the rest of his chocolate bar in his pocket.
Let's get going.
She sits down. The bus pulls away. The bus drives down an otherwise deserted road between fields. The sky is a midnight blue with large dark clouds. Pylons stand erect against the night sky. A bright light shines through the windscreen of the bus. Harrison brakes.
There must be an accident!
Two hooded guys run onto the bus.
Use this! She saw me! Get her out! Get the money! Get the money!
The men's faces are covered. One of them hits Harrison with a wheel brace, then they put a pillowcase over his head. The other one puts Harrison's coat over Jesse's head. They bundle both of them out of the bus and drive away in a car. Day. Squad cars are parked around the bus. Frost gets out of an unmarked car and joins Tulin. The bus has been cordoned off and uniformed officers are taking notes.
What do we know so far then, George?
Well, Marsh took the call from uniform first thing this morning.
Blimey, she's keen, isn't she?
Yeah, she was in the office, as instructed.
Yes, yes, all right, all right.
Anyway, the bus is tachymetered and stopped at 11:24.
And they only found it missing this morning.
Well, it's the last bus of the evening round here, Jack. The crew take it back to the depot, clock off, go home. Night security don't know the schedules.
What have we got?
Not a lot. We'll spin, Mark. But...
Socko's found these. A woman's watch. We haven't identified it yet. And this silver pendant. Looks like they came off in the struggle.
Where'd you find them?
Just over there, 6, 7, and 8. There's some sort of inscription on the pendant, but it's too mangled to make anything out. Socko's think the car drove over it.
All right. Let's see what the lab's come up with, then. Anything else?
Yeah. There's a couple of scrapes in the tarmac over there and some shards of glass. Ooh. There's also a light filament mixed up in the glass.
Well, maybe it's headlamp glass. You know, it could be a road rage attack after a collision.
There's no sign of damage to the front of the bus. So Socko's can't see any connection now.
Well, keep tabs on what forensics come up with, will you? Who's that?
That's the bus company manager. He's a bit shocked. We need to talk to him again.
A wrinkly man, Parker, paints on a clown face in front of the mirror, unsmiling. Tall willowy Marsh gets onto the bus with Frost and points at the windscreen.
Blood splattered on the windscreen there. It looks like there was a struggle. There were a couple of shirt buttons here and here, and a woman's shoe.
There are markers on the floor.
Well, there's more than one bloke was involved if they took the conductress as well.
Yeah, why take them at all?
Well, if we knew that, we would have solved the case, Miss Marples.
Parker paints on some big red lips. He has a white face with black around his eyes. The effect's macabre.
I don't think the driver would have done a runner with the night's takings. It could hardly have been a king's ransom, would it?
The driver's name is Mark Harrison. The conductress is Jessica Green, both single.
Well, they didn't have return tickets, did they?
Well, you don't know much about Harrison yet, except he had some trouble on a bus yesterday morning with some kids.
I wonder if that's the same lot that thumped you.
Yeah, could be. They did threaten to get even with the driver. And they'd be interested in any change there was.
I'll tell you what, you go back to the Nick and trawl through juvenile records, see what you can find. George and I'll go down to the depot, see what we can dig up.
Well, I still haven't got wheels, Gov.
Oh, God, blimey, here you go. Look, take my car, will you? And when you get to the Nick, find Sergeant Brady and tell him to give you a pool car. Say I said so.
Right.
She heads off.
Be lucky to get a bicycle with this year's budget.
Yeah. If you did, it wouldn't have any wheels.
At the bus depot, the manager, Townsend, is in his office. He takes out a locked cash box from a drawer. He then takes out an envelope with several photos inside that had been underneath the cash box. He starts feeding the photos into a shredder one by one. The photos are of a naked woman and a man caressing her. He takes a set of keys out of the drawer and hurriedly unlocks the cash box. He takes the padlock off the box and places the box back in the drawer. Parker makes his way towards a house. He now has a red wig and red nose on too. He wears a huge baggy blazer and oversized shoes. He carries a bag. A banner reads Happy Birthday and balloons are tied to the fence. Marsh sits at a computer.
I've organised your car.
Great, thanks.
There's been a run of incidents over the last few months involving gangs of kids, but I thought this might interest you. Four cars were reported stolen last night, probably joyriders. Two lads were seen dumping that one early as of this morning.
Marsh looks at a file.
Right. Get a truck down there. I want it brought into forensics.
Tell Inspector Frost where I've gone, will you?
Yeah.
She hurries off. The man, Sergeant Brady, speaks to white-haired Danny Trigg.
Danny.
Yeah?
You know, I reckon if you dive deep enough into the gene pool, you'll find that her and Jack are related.
Oh, you're wrong there, Sarge. Chalk and cheese, those two. They hate each other. There's history between them.
What do you mean?
Well, it was before Jack got here. He was chasing a knife assault. He didn't wait for backup. Him and a young copper cornered the bloke, and the PC got himself wounded.
Was it bad?
Oh, lost three fingers. Marsh was on Jack's team. She accused him of dereliction of duty, among other things. Said he not only ignored procedure, but put officers' lives at risk. Internal inquiry cleared him, but it put the brakes on his career. So, he ended up here.
Inside the house, Parker the Clown entertains a party of kids. At the bus depot...
Did they always work together?
No.
...by some lockers...
Most buses don't have conductors these days, do they?
Late night runs do.
Townsend cuts through a padlock.
It's a way to pick up some extra hours, and I think she wanted to keep out of the way of the ex-boyfriend for a while.
Who's that, this Tony Woods bloke you mentioned, is it?
Yeah.
Was he ever violent towards her, do you know?
He had a temper, let rip occasionally, though Jesse wouldn't stand for that.
So she, wasn't really bothered by him then.
She could stand up for herself. Mm. I mean, you have to when you work on the bus these days, I tell you.
Mm. These are her keys. I'll be taking them, just to let you know, all right?
Of course. Her car's still in the yard.
George, isn't he?
There's nothing much in Harrison's locker. No keys or coat.
Right. Okay.
Frost shuts the locker.
What? We had a spot about her in the office yesterday.
Oh, with Tony Woods?
No.
Oh. Who?
Well,
Well, come on.
Well, I can understand why the bloke got upset and, you know, might have a grudge against Mark Harrison.
Townsend shifts around awkwardly.
You will be sharing this information with me at some time today, will you?
You're sorting out another car today, are you?
As soon as I can, yeah.
You've reported it to the police?
Yeah, I have.
Get onto the insurance.
I will.
Yeah, but today we need two cars.
Well, I can use your car for a few days.
I can drop you off at work and pick you up, but I need the car for the shopping.
Well, we can do the shopping at the weekend.
Yeah, but I need...
I'll do the bloody car as soon as I can, all right?
Sarah stares at him. He looks away. He turns to face her.
Sorry. I'll speak to them.
I was just thinking about getting home.
It's all right, Mum. You stay with us for a couple of days.
Everything's fine, I promise.
Linda walks off. Andy takes his keys from a hook. Toolan and Frost are checking out Jesse's car in the car park of the depot. Toolan looks in the boot. Frost searches under the seats.
Well, it looks like we're going to have a word with this heel bloke by the sounds of things.
And the ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
There's nothing here, Jack.
No. Do you know what I don't understand? There's no handbag or purse either in her locker, this car, or in the bus. Unless, of course, they tossed it. Make sure they search the area, will you? And
In the meantime, for Miss Green's.
He shakes Jessie's keys. At the birthday party, a woman brings in a big cake with candles on it. It has a rainbow and says happy birthday. In Jessie's messy flat.
This place been turned over, or is she naturally untidy?
There's no forced entry.
Toulon walks off. Frost takes out a printed bill from a drawer.
Oh, blimey, some hefty bills here. Tell you what, if retail therapy was on the National Health, it really would be bankrupt.
Shaking his head, he puts the bill back.
I'll tell you another thing, there's no photographs here. No happy holiday snaps, no pictures of Mum and Dad or the cat, the dog.
There's no clothes either.
No?
The wardrobe's practically empty.
No sign of any suitcase?
No. And she didn't take it to work if she was planning a trip.
I'll check her bathroom.
Frost answers his phone.
Frost. Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
He sits down on the bed, listening.
Right. No. You stay there. Wait for me and George. Yeah. All right, get on. That was Miss Super-Efficient Marsh. Says she's found something. Not her conscience, in case you're wondering.
Jack.
Hmm?
Sharp spin in the bathroom.
Ah. Drugs or medication. Better check with her GP. See if she was registered.
Toulon nods. Parker steals jewellery from a jewellery box. A woman downstairs calls up.
Did you find the bathroom, Mr. Charlie?
Yes. Thanks, Mrs. Atkins. I'll be on my way now.
He stuffs some more items into his pockets and heads out of the bedroom. Frost and Toulon join Marsh in a forensic garage in a huge hangar.
All right, what do you got?
That was stolen last night from outside the King's Head pub on Longridge Road. Owner, a Michael Davies. A couple of kids were seen dumping it. Partial description fits the boys on the bus.
Ah, right. Any evidence?
No, not yet.
Okay. Right, well, I'll tell you what I got. The conductress had a bolshy boyfriend. But the driver, Mark Harrison, now, he used to be a lorry driver, and 5 years ago, the lorry that he was driving went out of control, mounted the pavement, and killed four people. Three adults and a baby.
And he was allowed behind the wheel of a bus?
Yeah, well, the law said that it made a mistake, and so they said he was innocent.
Do we have the names of the families?
Yes, we have. Linda Heal. She lost her husband, her daughter, and her granddaughter. And, Robert Trusham, his wife was killed.
Would they know he was out?
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, they don't bother to tell us, do they? So why should they tell them? But anyway, here's a coincidence. There was a bloke called Heal who had a hissy fit in the bus depot yesterday.
Yeah, we traced him.
Well done, George. I tell you what, look, you go to Heal's place and check that out. And George and I will go down and check out the Harrison place. All right?
Toulon and Frost are in Harrison's tidy, modern flat.
There's nothing in the bedroom, Jack. Beds are made.
In the kitchen, Toulon opens a cupboard door.
Fridge has a few packets of TV dinners.
Well, it's home from home, then, isn't it?
DVDs.
Some porn here, look. Well, a single bloke, over 21. No harm in a bit of home entertainment, is there?
Trouble is, we still don't know who the target was. Jessica Green or Harrison. Or why either of them was taken.
Jealousy, anger, revenge. An assault gone wrong. Oh, I don't know, search me.
At the Heels, Marsh is with Sarah and Linda.
Your husband went down to the bus depot yesterday.
That was my fault.
No, don't be silly.
When I saw Harrison, it was just like at the trial. He didn't bat an eyelid. It's not right, is it? It's not right.
Can you tell me where your husband was last night?
Andy. He was at adult education classes. He's studying at Denton Tech.
What time did he get home?
late because of the car.
What, it broke down?
No, it was stolen. That's why I thought you were here at first, because of the car.
It's me. Anyone home? I'm proper stuck.
John freezes on spotting Marsh. They gawk at each other. Andy sups a pint in a pub. He takes it from one side of the bar to another and stands next to a guy, Bob Trusham.
Bob. The police been round to see you yet?
No. You?
No. But they will.
Andy chews his lip.
What do you think?
I think he should burn in hell.
John and Marsh stand outside the Heels house.
Thanks for not saying anything.
I want their names.
Well, those boys ain't at my school.
Yeah, but they're around. And you know them. You tell me their names, or I go back in the house and talk to your mother.
I don't know where they live. I only know their first names.
In a damp, dingy basement, a man carrying a torch and wearing a balaclava opens a door. Harrison's inside. He's bound with a pillowcase still over his head. The man rips off the pillowcase.
Don't leave me. Please, don't leave me here!
He shuts Harrison in. He opens another door. Inside, Jesse lies on a concrete floor.
Please. Please, I need...
The man puts duct tape over her mouth and yanks her up onto her feet. He picks up his torch, then he half carries her out of the room.
Oh my God, it's Charlie! What's his name? Come on in, come on in. Kids, kids, surprise, Charlie the Clown's here!
It's Charlie the Chuckling Clown.
Well, don't look so bloody miserable then. I'm paying good money for this.
Parker enters. Another woman, Helen, reels at the sight of Parker.
Where's the birthday boy?
Girl!
Harrison always maintained that his steering went when he hit those people.
So that's why his appeal was successful.
Well, the technical expert for the prosecution was found to have got it wrong on a similar case.
And the bus company couldn't turn him down for employment.
Yeah, exactly. Not unless they wanted the Human Rights Brigade snapping at their heels. Well, I don't know where we are at the moment, whether or not it's a jealous boyfriend or angry family. You know, it's still wide open.
Forensics?
Oh, yes. Bad news, I'm afraid. That damaged pendant that we found was a medic alert. Now, the search team have found Jessica Green's handbag. It was about a mile from where she was attacked. But inside, they found her insulin kit, which means that if she doesn't get two injections a day, she goes into a coma and dies.
Right. I'll get the media onto it. Daily briefings from now on, Jack.
Yes, sir.
At the police station reception desk...
Ah, Jack, just the man. You owe a fiver for the canteen's monthly lottery fund.
What, already?
Overdue by 3 weeks.
Oh, is that all? Well, hang about.
He feels in his pockets.
I've lost my wallet.
Oh, come on, Jack.
No, no, seriously, I have. I've lost it. Blimey.
In Toulon's car.
No, it's not here. I must have dropped it somewhere else.
Oh, you don't get it out often enough to drop it, Jack.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, blimey. I bet it's been nicked.
What?
At the petrol station, that couple having a row. Well, it was a setup. She bumped into me, didn't she? I've been robbed.
Oh, that was just about the time you told me to be careful, was it? Phone the bank, cancel the cards.
Right.
How many cards you got?
Well, a few. And my warrant card.
It's the door to another. He quickly shuts it again and heads down the hallway.
It's all right, it's all right.
Helen slaps him.
What is going on?
I don't know. Oh, honest, she just did a knot.
All right, love, all right, baby. Come on, let's get you downstairs. Must have done something.
I didn't do anything.
I've got to go, Trish, please, I've got to go. All right, love, all right. I'll take you.
Trish leads Helen away.
No, I'll drive. You stay here with the kids. No, you're in no fit state. I'll call you a cab. I can't see, Tart. Tell me, come on now.
If I find out you've done anything to her, my Barry will sort you out proper.
Parker stares down at Helen. A taxi pulls out of the driveway with Helen in the back. Parker knocks on the window.
No, let me, please.
Charlie!
I'm sorry. Look, I can explain. Please.
The taxi pulls away. In Frost's office...
No, I do not have the numbers because they have been stolen.
He smiles irritably.
No, I haven't got the statements either because I'm not at home. Look, I've just told you, I haven't got the bloody numbers. Oh, God.
I got Christian names for those boys on the bus.
You haven't got the numbers of my credit cards on you by any chance, have you?
Why?
Oh, that's all right, never mind.
He waves his hands.
Andy Neil's son, John, was at the bus stop with those boys who threatened the driver. Harrison was my driver on the bus.
Yeah. Are you trying to say that you think that Heal's son may have something to do with the attack?
No, it's doubtful. His parents never discussed the case with him. He was nowhere near the trial, and he was only 11 at the time. He probably had no idea what Harrison looked like. Anyway, he was at a training session every night at the pool.
Frost frowns.
Well, look, why don't you just go and double-check that he was having a training session at the pool that night? In the meantime, I'm going to have a word with this Trusham bloke whose wife was killed with the Heal family.
She sorts through folders.
Gov, just one more thing. Andy Heal's car was stolen last night while he was in class.
Well, before the bus was nailed?
Well, it was one of the files that Sergeant Brady gave me on stolen vehicles.
And you didn't spot it?
I missed it. I made a mistake.
She eyes him, pushing her chin up proudly. Frost marches over to her with a severe expression.
Well, we're all allowed to make one of those at some time, aren't we? Don't worry, I'll check it.
Well, no, I can do that.
No. I want you to sit in your nice new car that Sergeant Brady gave you, and I want you to stake out Tony Woods' place for as long as it takes.
He ostentatiously throws his coat over his arm. On a street, Parker sits on a bench. He's removed his wig, but is still made up like a clown. He rolls a cigarette. Kids stare. The two boys suppress their laughter.
Bugger off. Go on or I'll pluck you one.
The boys run.
Lads, no, I'm sorry. Hey.
Watching the boys run away, Parker sags. Frost talks to a mechanic in a garage.
Do you know Bob Trusham?
It's Andy. He's dressed in overalls.
Only through the trial.
Not socialising or anything?
Well, I see him around.
Doesn't it strike you as odd that the very same night your car was stolen, a crime was committed against someone who hurt your family?
Well, it was an added aggravation I didn't need. Have you found it yet?
No. I haven't found Harrison or Jessica Green either.
Listen, Inspector, the system let me and my family down. Harrison is guilty of murder as far as I'm concerned. But we've had enough tragedy in our lives. I wouldn't do anything to make matters worse.
You didn't get back till gone 1 o'clock in the morning. That gave you ample time. You also have a motive.
You can check and double-check as much as you like. I was in class till late, and then I searched for my car, then I thumbed a lift home. I didn't want to phone my wife and wake her up.
And he goes back to the car he's working on.
I'm sorry to hear about the girl, though.
Andy meets Frost's steely gaze.
All right, thank you.
Frost strides off. Andy glances at him anxiously. The taxi pulls up on the corner of a street outside a pub. Helen gets out. Helen reaches into her pocket. As she heads onto the busy pedestrian street, she spots Parker again. They hold each other's gaze and she backs away. He holds up his hand, she legs it. He chases after her.
Mrs. Hang on! I can explain everything!
He sees her race down an alleyway, but when he reaches it, there's no sign of her. He continues down the alley. On a back street, John's on his mobile.
Hey, listen, the police were around my house looking for you. They clocked you on a bus, mouthing off to the driver.
Are you playing Judas and grassing us up, Johnny?
I'm warning you, aren't I? I gave them false names. You owe me, Lewis. You'll remember that. Keep your head down.
Lewis hangs up. In a gas yard...
We subcontract to the gas companies. It's hard graft. He's a good worker, Bob Trusham.
Does he ever talk about his wife?
He never got over the accident. Fills his spare time with volunteer work.
Oh, yeah? Who's that for?
The kids' clubs. He coaches the under-16s. Gives the lads something to do. Keeps them off the street.
Inside...
I was the luckiest bloke in the world when she married me. She straightened me out.
You needed straightening out, did you?
I did time 12 years ago.
Oh, yeah? For what?
I got mixed up with the wrong crowd. Petty theft and dud checks mostly.
I'd have remembered.
It wasn't here. When I got out, that's when I met Maggie.
He hands Frost a photo of a young, fair-haired woman.
She breathed new life into me, she did.
Frost studies the photo.
You have strong feelings about Harrison, though.
I hate him. Maggie was 26 when he killed her and the others, a young mum and a baby. The bastard should have rotted in the nick.
Frost leans forward, staring at Trusham.
Have you heard him?
No. I learned my lesson. I try and stop the kids getting into the same sort of trouble I did when I was their age.
Frost leans back and looks down.
Where were you last night?
Trusham frowns.
Football training with the kids' second team till about 10. And then the pub for a couple of hours. I'm not good on my own, so the pub's got a sports channel I watch there. And then, bed, alone.
Frost eyes him fiercely.
That's very difficult to prove. Unless evidence tells us otherwise. All right, go on.
And I want you down Denton Nick tonight to make a statement. Don't make me have to come and find you. Frost.
His face falls. A squad car with flashing lights is parked in the alley.
What have we got, George?
Over here. Police surgeon's on his way.
Toulon pulls back a blanket to reveal Parker the Clown dead. His eyes are wide open.
Who the hell is that?
That's Charlie the Chuckling Clown.
Well, he ain't got much to laugh at now, has he?
Who would kill a clown?
Well, I don't know. Punch and Judy, maybe?
This isn't a matter for levity, Jack.
No, right. Now, they're doing a post-mortem now, so I'll know a bit more later on.
Now, press and television are highlighting Jessica Green's medical condition. We can only hope that the kidnapper didn't know she was diabetic and that this nudges his conscience.
Well, if he did know, that means he had serious intent to cause her harm.
Yes. Jack, your wallet was found in the street and handed in, empty, apart from its warrant card, thankfully. Mm. Count yourself extremely lucky, Jack.
Sir.
As for your lost credit cards...
Mullet opens the door to his office. They go in.
This is Mr. Brock from your bank.
Inspector.
Oh, what did you do?
They shake.
We're keen to work closely with Denton CID on this case.
All right, well, what do you have in mind?
Well, the best way to catch the card thieves is to have one of your cards active. What they do is they phone a charity, offer a small donation. If that's accepted, then they know the card is still valid. That way we keep tabs on them.
And hopefully we can apprehend them.
All right, well, let's nab them before my name's all over Denton as a big spender. I never live that down.
We've authorised a temporary card for you, Inspector, and my people should have already given you a new PIN.
Ah, yes, yes, they have. There it is. Look, 5199.
His corpse is pallid and there's bruising on the side of his head.
That's Lofty Parker.
You know him?
Yeah. Lofty's an old lag. Just petty stuff. In and out of the nick all his life. What was the cause of death?
Fractured skull. He may have fallen or he may have been hit. It's a bit difficult to tell at the moment. But a blunt force trauma like this could be the result of being in a fight. There's bruising to his face.
No. No, Lofty was harmless. He wouldn't be involved in violence. No, someone's cracked him one.
Well, there was evidence of an old head injury from a few years back. That wouldn't have helped. I'll let you know when I finish my test.
Yeah, right. What did he have on him when they brought him in?
Mobile phone, house keys, a ring, and a suitcase full of clown's tricks.
Well, let's hope he raised a smile for someone before this happened.
Woods pulls up in his car by the side of a street. Marsh is waiting in her car on the opposite side of the street. When she sees him pull up, she gets out of her car.
Mr. Woods?
She shows her warrant card.
What are you doing?
She goes through his mail.
What are you doing?
Are you having a relationship with Jessica Green?
Yes.
When did you last see her?
About 3 days ago. I'm a rep. I was away for a couple of days. I had no idea this had happened. I didn't. I was going to take her out tonight. We'll always go out when I get back.
He moves a suitcase.
We were going out regular. We were going to get married.
Put the case back on the bed, please.
He stares at her.
Put the case back on the bed.
Glowering at her, he throws the case back on the bed. He puts his hand to his brow as Marsh opens the case. It's full of women's clothing.
Well, Mr. Woods, either you took these from Jessica Green's flat or you're a cross-dresser trying to fit into a size 10.
Jessie's in a dark, grimy chamber on her own. She looks around, jittery. She gets up slowly. She shouts through a grate in the ceiling.
Hey! Hey!
Trembling, she reaches up to the wire grate, but she's not tall enough to reach it. She falls down. Crying, she pulls her coat around her. Jessie cowers in the room she's locked in. She reaches into the pocket of the coat she's wearing, which was originally Harrison's coat, and she finds the half-eaten chocolate bar there. She starts to eat the chocolate bar. She notices something on one of the scrunched up and dirty blankets on the floor. She picks up the blanket and attempts to pull off a metal label sewn to the corner. She manages to pull the label off and slowly gets to her feet. With a quivering hand and tears in her eyes, she reaches up to the grate. She tries to use the metal label as a kind of screwdriver to release the screws holding the grate in place. On the bus in the forensic garage...
The bus was clean before the last run of the night, but we found a sliver of rubber on the floor. We think it might be from one of the attacker's shoes. Trainers, most likely. We found it very near to some stress marks on the floor which indicate torsion on the rubber.
What you mean, as if in a struggle?
That is a possibility. Now, these blood splatters are definitely Harrison's. We know that from his medical and prison records, and...
He leads Frost off the bus.
It's the same blood we found in this car.
The stolen car.
Are you trying to tell me that this car was used in the kidnap?
I don't know, but the lab confirms that the fibres we found in it have Harrison's blood on them.
Frost stares ahead, his brow furrowed. Someone enters the room where Jessie's being held. He puts a hand on Jessie's forehead. Jessie lies completely still. He then lifts Jessie up and carries her out, her body limp. At the police station in the incident room, Frost stands in front of a whiteboard.
Time is running out for this girl, so I'm splitting up the team. DC Harris and his lot will be doing the legwork on Lofty Parker's death. DC Simpson here and her team will be double-checking everything on Jessica Green and Harrison and those kids. Right, George?
There's now a definite connection between this car, stolen by kids, and Mark Harrison. But there's no other forensic evidence.
No, they could have used, you know, plastic sheeting or even those black bin liners. Right, so what else have we got?
Sex.
How much?
What time are you free?
Jessica Green was sleeping with Mark Harrison.
These photos were found at Tony Wood's flat, along with her clothes and various other bits and pieces. Tony says he bought Jessica a digital camera, but there's no sign of it.
No, it's not at Jessica's or Mark Harrison's flat.
Was Woods part of a threesome?
Not as far as we know.
Well, she seems to be bed-hopping casually enough.
If she was sleeping around, then there could be plenty of others who might want to hurt her.
These girls don't help themselves, do they? Yeah, Sergeant Marsh is right. If Jessica Green is promiscuous, this could throw the investigation wide open.
No, it doesn't. This girl is a victim. She's ill, she needs medical treatment, and we're all she's got. Now, my main concern is finding out who might be the prime suspect, and it's Woods. Woods had the key to her flat. He took all the clothes he bought her. He's jealous and he has a temper.
Is there any way you can place him in that stolen car?
No, sir. But he did have plenty of time to get back from his trip and do it.
And there's no forensic evidence other than Harrison's blood on those fibres?
No. The photos are all I've got. But it does give him a motive. Now, look here, I can't get a solicitor down here for another few hours, so I need your permission to interview him now.
On what grounds?
Well, it's a matter of urgency. To avoid any further risk to the victims, especially Jessica Green.
Mallet nods.
I agree. But if he is involved, do you believe he had an accomplice?
Well, yeah, he must have done. I mean, he couldn't have got both of them off the bus on his own.
Mallet nods again.
Right.
Right, thank you. Take the photos.
Jack, interview. Don't overstep the mark.
Mallet glances at Marsh, who in turn looks at Frost. Affronted, he leaves. Valley onto a high street. Jesse is dumped out of the back onto the street. She lies there on the street in a crumpled heap. A tramp drinks in a doorway next to her. Jesse, who is very much the worse for wear, crawls along the pavement with laboured movements. She's grubby and pale and seems a bit out of it. She leans against the wall next to where the tramp is. At the police station, Marsh and Frost interview Woods.
Canteen gossip at the bus depot says you hassled her a lot and that she dumped you a few weeks ago.
Not true.
Must have really hurt when she started seeing Harrison.
The photos.
That was ages ago. That was all over and done with. That was before me and her got together.
How would you know that? Were you following her?
He glances up.
Maybe you got a violent temper and she was scared of you.
Frost smiles at him.
Who took these pictures, Tony? Was that you?
Me?
Hmm. Yeah, you. Do you like getting involved in a, you know, in the threesome, a little bit hanky-panky?
No.
You got the pictures?
I wouldn't. That's not my thing.
Oh. Maybe it was hers. Maybe it was her suggestion, and that's why you hurt her.
No, that's all wrong. You shut up.
Woods has his arms folded.
Someone took these pictures. You bought her the camera. Where is it?
He eyes Woods.
Are there pictures of you two together? Is that what the problem is?
I'm not into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you knew she was sleeping with someone else.
Oh, come on, Tony. Admit it. Hmm? You saw the photographs and you threw a wobbly. You got someone to help you, and you took her somewhere. Hmm? That's what you did.
I didn't hurt her. I wouldn't. I love her.
Wood seemed shaken, his expression dazed.
Where did you take her? Hmm? And there was someone else involved, wasn't there? Hmm? Where is she?
I don't know. Honest. I didn't do anything. I never knew she took pictures with other blokes. I loved her. I only found that stuff when I went to her flat.
Where's the camera?
I don't know.
If we find the camera, there may be a picture in it of the bloke who's got her.
I don't know. Honest. Look, you've got to find her. Please. Find her. For me.
On the street, Jesse has managed to stand, clinging to the wall. Frost and Marsh exit the interview room.
No, it's not him. Not in a month of Sundays.
You can't be sure that wasn't an act.
All right, then you bang him up for a couple more hours and do all the paperwork.
Marsh rolls her eyes as Frost marches off. On the street, people walk past Jessie, who's trembling violently. She tries to extend her arm out for help, but she can't. Frost goes into his office. His brow is creased in concentration. He puts his hands in his pockets and turns to Toulon.
We're missing something, George.
What about Woods?
Hmm? Woods? Oh, he's all mouth and no trousers. Wimp of the First Order. Marsh is down there now, sucking her thumb, trying to work out whether it was all an act.
Frost sits at his desk.
I tell you what, have you got Jessica Green's work timetables there? Hmm.
Toulon picks up some papers and hands them to Frost. Frost scrutinises them.
Right. Look at this. See, overtime, extra shifts, more overtime, which she'd need the overtime to pay for those shopping bills, wouldn't she?
And I'm surprised she could find enough time to spend the money.
Yeah. But look. They're ad hoc, extra shifts. You know, as and when she could get them. Nothing regular, see? Look, no set dates. Look, here. Days off, weekends.
And three late-night runs, each night, different driver.
She may have been bonking Mark Harrison when she had the time and the energy, but only her supervisor would have known exactly what bus she was on that night. And?
Oh, I let him walk. Huh. So Harrison must have been the target all along.
Yes. Yeah, this was planned. The route, the time and the place. I mean, talk about being unlucky in love. She was on the wrong bus with the wrong bloke at the wrong time.
Night. Jessie stands on the street. Her arms wrapped around her, she trembles, her face contorted in pain, tears wet her cheeks. Gradually, she slides down the wall onto her knees, then hunches over forwards, her head hanging. Night. Alone, Frost sits at his desk working. Marsh enters with some papers in her hand. She looks at her watch and thumbs through the papers. Frost doesn't acknowledge her but continues working, straightening out the papers again. Marsh glances at him.
You know, I accepted this transfer because after this case, I'm getting out while I still have a life. Better pay, better hours, and no more drowning in paperwork.
Oh, yeah, good for you.
And before I become one of those coppers who can't sleep because somewhere along the line I might have missed something.
Frost glares.
Like me, you mean?
Exactly like you.
She nods vigorously.
Coppers lose sleep because they care.
You can't win them all. Not every case.
I can try.
She nods dubiously. She leaves. John and Andy amble through a cemetery.
Why don't we ever talk about Auntie Joan and the baby or Granddad?
I don't know, son, you just don't.
If you go on about it,
it just hurts more and more. That's just to deal with it. Put it behind you.
Yeah, but if you don't talk about
it... Robertson, will you? There's a good lad.
What? So if something's difficult, we don't say anything? Why don't anyone do anything about bosses like Harrison?
Because it doesn't get us anywhere.
But it helps, it has to. What's wrong with him?
John, don't speak to your father like that.
His bloody family's dysfunctional, you know that. You should have done something.
John storms off.
What did you say to him?
Nothing.
Well, you must have said something.
I didn't say a word.
What's going on? Not now, Mum. Not now.
What's all the shouting?
Oh, Mum, not now, please.
Stop with the two of you. Here of all places. I just hope no one in this family has been stupid enough to do anything about Harrison. We are not those sort of people. This is not what this family is about.
Linda stalks off. Andy stares into the distance, troubled. At the police station, Frost walks downstairs and through the corridor up to Toulon.
Oh. Jack,
yeah.
Statement. A Mrs. Helen Campbell. She thinks she killed Lofty Parker.
Ooh, well, there's a result.
And Parker's last two gigs. A Mrs. Joan Atkins and a Mrs. Trish Monroe.
Monroe?
Mm-hmm. Barry Monroe's wife.
Well, the car salesman. Oh, there's a wheeler and dealer, if ever I've heard of one.
In an interview room...
So you were at Mrs. Monroe's children's party?
Yes. That's where I saw... Mr. Parker, is it?
Mm-hmm. Did he attack you?
No, he frightened me. Well, he tried to grab me. I think...
Tearful, she rubs her head.
I struggled. I don't remember very much. And then I went into town and for some reason he was there again.
She cries.
And I don't understand why. I panicked.
We found traces of Parker's makeup on your clothing.
I think I hit him at the house.
Did you confront him in the alley?
She shakes her head.
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Inspector, Mrs. Campbell came here voluntarily. I've spoken to her family GP. She suffers from a rare condition called coulrophobia.
You are?
It's the fear of clowns.
I beg your pardon?
Coulrophobia. It invokes panic attacks, temporary amnesia, sweating, nausea, even terror in some cases. Mrs. Campbell's condition is well documented.
He frowns.
Well, not round here, it isn't.
Frost and Toulon leave the interview room.
Maybe my mullet phobia is a medical condition.
Well, if she did clobber Lofty in that alleyway, she's still responsible for his death, Jack.
Yeah, I know, but I think she's just a scared housewife, George. I mean, let her sort herself out, and then we'll talk to her again if needs be. Meanwhile, give her a caution and send her off home. I don't think she's going to do a runner.
In Frost's office...
We found a list at Loftus Flat of all the kids' parties they'd done recently.
Right. And this is all his swag, is it?
Mm-hmm. And most of the women who hired Parker only realised their pieces were missing days, even weeks later. They thought they'd simply lost their jewellery. This one ring was found in his pocket.
It's in an evidence bag.
Mm-hmm. And does this bring us any closer to finding who rolled him?
Well, the kids' party before Mrs. Monroe's was Mrs. Atkins. And when we interviewed her, she realised she was missing two rings. She inherited them from her mother. Luckily enough, she had them photographed for insurance purposes.
Mm-hmm. And what about this other woman? What's her name? Mrs. Monroe.
She said she isn't missing anything.
Not missing anything? That's odd. Why would Parker change his mode of operation?
No. Unless Mrs. Campbell interrupted him. Because Parker was upstairs, Jack. There is no question about that.
What would happen if Mrs. Monroe found out that Parker had lifted some of her stuff and she told her husband And he went after the thief. What about that?
I told you nothing was stolen.
We want you to be doubly sure, Mrs. Monroe. Then if anybody tries to flog anything on the street, we can eliminate any possible theft from you.
Do you think Mrs. Campbell was involved in Mr. Parker's death?
Oh, the clown. Was that his name?
Yes. Even a clown has a mother and father.
He glowers at Trish.
Well, she was hyped up over something. Yeah? Maybe. But it was probably an accident.
Frost looks up, raising his brows.
What was?
His death.
Who told you how he died?
Trish glances down, her jaw slackens, she gawps.
This is a very nice picture. Very nice ring you're wearing in it.
It's the ring in the evidence bag.
In fact, it's very similar to this one.
Frost has the evidence bag with him. He takes the ring out. It has a large red stone on the front. Trish swallows.
May I?
Trish holds her hand out reluctantly. Frost slips the ring onto her middle finger. It's a perfect fit.
Oh, look at that. Isn't it nice? We found that ring on the dead man.
Jack?
Hmm?
Mrs. Atkins' ring.
He holds it up.
Mrs. Monroe, would you mind telling me how another woman's piece of stolen jewellery ended up in your jewellery box?
At the police station, Brady stands behind a desk. Barry, Trish and DC Harris stand in front.
Well, she phoned her husband. Once she knew that Parker had cherry-picked her jewellery and he went after him, found him. Well, gave him a push and he fell and, well, Bob's your uncle.
Any CCTV?
No, it was too far down the alley.
And then he took the jewellery back to his wife, not realising that Parker had stolen it from someone else earlier.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. And of course, she didn't realise that amongst it all was Mrs. Atkins' ring.
A deliberate killing, do you think?
Oh, no. I mean, he couldn't have known that Lofty Parker had an old head injury, could he?
Well, by law, he's still responsible for the death.
Yes, I know.
Jack?
Yes?
Excuse me, sir. I found the girl.
Oh, right.
Apparatus. Outside the hospital room.
She's in a hyperglycemic coma.
Is she going to pull through?
Give her less than a 50-50 chance.
Marsh and Frost look at Jesse.
Is there any sign of violence?
There's some bruising. There are restraint marks on her wrists and cuts to her feet. Two fingernails were torn on her right hand. Has she been scratching something?
Frost nods.
Is there any sign of sexual assault?
No.
The doctor shakes his head.
Well, that's one small mercy anyway. Have you got the clothes that she was wearing?
They examine the clothes.
Did she escape or was she released?
Well, only she can answer that.
Maybe she was the primary target after all. Harrison was just trying to protect her.
Making up for past sins, do you mean?
Well, being responsible for causing injury stays with some people.
Was it really?
Got a key, yeah? Mm. Too small for a front door key.
Yeah. No, I don't know what that is. Let's bag it up, anyway.
He hands it back to her.
Well, we're not going to get any forensics off her. Not now the hospital has cleaned her up.
No.
We'll have to see if we can get something off these.
Marsh pulls out Harrison's jacket.
Man's jacket.
She holds it out to Frost.
No need to guess who this belonged to. It's pretty scuffed. Oh, bit of dried blood there. It's got some grease and oil on it. I tell you what, we better not make a pig's ear of this, so better send it straight down to the lab. Wait a minute.
He finds the metal label.
Oh. What does that say?
Oh, it looks like a manufacturer's name tag. Santola. Jacket must have been made in South America.
No, not according to this label. It said made in China. Oh, there's a surprise. Anyway, it's something to go on. Let me have another look at that little key we had a minute ago. There you go.
One of the medical staff scowls.
Frost. Yes? Right. Right, okay, thank you. Forensic. Tell you what, get back down there, Nick. Get hold of those photos. I'll meet you there.
In the forensic garage.
Inspector, that broken glass and bulb filament, it's industrial. We found fragments of three halogen bulbs. It's a floodlight.
A floodlight? What do you mean, like that one, you mean?
Yes, exactly. Garages, building sites, road maintenance, they'd all use them in one form or another.
Yeah, but you'd need mains power for one of these things, wouldn't you?
Not if you've a power pack, you don't.
Frost goes into a separate office area where Marsh is.
Something bugging me about those photos. Where are they?
There, what?
Yeah, I'll show you in a minute. If I'm right.
He lays out the photos.
Yes, yes. This bloke's trying to hide his face. That is not Harrison.
But how can you be sure?
Well, look, he's got a wedding ring on and he hasn't.
Men in the raunchy photos.
Well, if it's not Harrison, it's not Tony Woods.
She takes off her specs.
Who is it?
Frost takes a padlock.
This is the padlock from her locker, right?
Yeah.
This is her key. I bet you they don't fit.
Frost tries the key in the padlock. It doesn't fit.
No, I thought not. Someone needed to break into her locker and search it before we did.
Him.
Him.
We had an affair.
In Townsend's office.
It was just a bit of fun. I broke into her locker, changed the lock. I need to see if there are any more photos.
And were there?
I found a camera. Yeah, there were other pictures.
He's deleted them.
Poor Jess, I had no idea she was a diabetic.
Yeah, well, the secrets we keep, right?
My wife, is she? I told her I was working late.
He stares imploringly.
I had nothing, absolutely nothing to do with what happened to Jess. Nothing, I swear.
Well, whether you did or you didn't, I won't be able to save your job. Whether you could save your marriage, that's up to you. Go on.
They leave. In Frost's office, Toulon's on the phone.
Right, Marsh, get a couple of bodies to go down to Andy Heal's workplace. See if any of his workshop floodlights are either broken or missing.
Already done. Gas Company 2. None of their crews have reported any of theirs missing or broken.
Patrol cars just spotted half a dozen hooded kids heading for the Midvale shopping centre. Descriptions match your boys on the bus.
Oh, they're probably blitzing the place.
All right, tell Uniform to hold off till we get there.
Frost sits in a cafe in a shopping centre. He's on his hands free.
I've got two of them here. They're rummaging about in a sports bag.
He watches two kids. Marsh stands elsewhere in the shopping centre, also on her hands free.
I've got two white males.
Toulon directs a uniformed police officer.
One of them's a boy from the bus.
All exits are covered.
They might have hammers or knives in the bags.
Right. We don't want anybody getting hurt. Come on, let's go and nab them.
Gov, wait for backup.
As Frost approaches the two boys, Palmer and Lewis, they pull out charity collection shakers.
I saw the little kids.
And I ain't telling no fibs.
It's a sorry sight
to see their plight.
The parents are crying.
The children are dying.
So make their lives better.
Make this a red letter.
Day.
Hey.
Hey, don't go away.
Make it real.
That's not a big deal.
A few coins in the bounty.
That's not a big mountain.
So you got some heart.
And make sure you part
with a cash donation.
We're a caring nation.
Smiling, Frost takes out a note.
Yeah, all right. Okay, there you go then.
They're open-mouthed.
Cheers, mate.
That's right, you're welcome, son. And by the way, you're nicked. All right, come on. Hey, come and get these two. Go on, take them away, will you?
Frost exits an interview room where Palmer's being interviewed.
Hi, Jack, how is everything?
Well, I'll let you know in a moment, sir.
George, when you're ready.
Tulin's with Lewis.
Well, the lads are being a bit tight-lipped, but Lewis there admits to threatening Mark Harrison on the bus that morning.
And it's fibres from his jacket, the one with Harrison's blood on it, that were found in the stolen car.
Yeah.
Well, then they are involved.
Ah, well, no, not quite. You see, they admit to stealing a car from a pub car park, taking it on a joyride, then trashing the car. So I can't see how it can be them.
Well, what about the blood?
Well, there was a scuffle on the bus that morning and some of Harrison's blood ended up on Lewis's jacket.
So, we are no closer finding Harrison.
Well, if I get the same story from the other lad, no.
Other than car theft, can we charge them with obtaining money by false pretenses?
Well, yes. No, this is genuine, sir. They were collecting money for the children's hospice. Which, incidentally, contribution would be helpful, sir.
Mallet reaches into his pocket.
Oh, even I managed 20, sir.
Reluctantly, Mallet stuffs another tenner into the shaker and Frost beams at him.
Thank you.
Keep me informed then, Jack.
Yes, sir.
Mallet marches off. Tulin comes out.
Ah, Trigg, just the man. Make sure this gets back to the school, will you? But do a whip round the station first. No coins, only notes.
I'm busy.
Well, make yourself unbusy for 10 minutes. Nothing like doing a bit of good for those in need. Heavenly rewards and all of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll probably have to borrow a tenner to get in the place at all.
Well, that's all right, as long as you don't borrow off me.
Chance would be a fine thing.
That's true. Hey, don't forget Mr. Mullet. And no matter what he says, he has not made a donation. Right? He's suffering from false memory syndrome. Sad case. Go on, off you go.
All right.
Right, George.
Frost grabs a written statement from him and they enter the office.
Well, it's the same story.
Except for one thing. They gave John Heal a lift that night.
Frost frowns.
John Heal lied about those boys' names.
Yeah. He also said that he was at swimming practice that night. Maybe he wasn't.
No, I've double-checked. He was there. From 7.30 till just after 11. He can't have got from the pool to the site of the bus attack by 11.24.
And he can't be in two places at once. Either he was at swim practice, seen by witnesses, or he wasn't.
Yeah, now, those boys said they dropped Heal about half a mile from his dad's night college at about 7. Now, supposing he had a spare set of car keys, that would mean that his dad's car theft isn't. And he would have had help.
Father and son taking the law into their own hands.
Yes. Harrison was the target. And he would have needed somewhere familiar to hide both Harrison and Jessica Green.
Forensic said the clothes had been kept somewhere damp and had grease on them.
Frost thinks.
Pump house at a swimming pool.
People swim in lanes. John slices through the water with a powerful breaststroke. He wears a swimming cap and goggles. A man shows Frost down to the basement. A sign reads, pool filtration system. No unauthorised admittance.
George, anything?
Another week or two, no?
Old Inspector, no one can get down here without a pass key. That won't hide anyone. It's only me and the engineer that have got a key, so...
Engineer? Wouldn't be a gas engineer by any chance, would it?
No, the filtration system.
Mm-hmm. And you're certain that John Heal was training here last Tuesday night?
Your lady sergeant asked me twice, all right? Yes, every night, absolutely. I'd swear to it.
All right. Well, George?
Hang on. Did break down last Tuesday night.
You what?
Yeah, for an hour. We cleared the pool at 9 o'clock.
For an hour.
Amongst the pipes, Frost and Tulin nod at one another. Marsh is poolside watching John. Stepping along, she matches his pace. Taking a breath sideways, he notices her and slows. He gazes across to the other side of the pool to see Tulin standing there somberly. Panicked, he dives under the surface towards a viewing window. Frost stands behind the window and beckons him ominously. At the window, John stops and surfaces next to Marsh, who's crouched at the poolside. The door to the underground chamber where Harrison lies opens. Someone enters. Weak and gaunt, and wearing just boxer shorts and a vest, Harrison struggles to get to his feet. The man yanks him out of the room. Frost's with John in the pool locker rooms.
I was here, I told you.
Yeah, you got a lift in. You arrived early and you left early. You hung about long enough to get noticed and then you scarpered. But one thing you didn't notice was they closed the pool that night. And there's another thing you didn't notice. See that little bit out of that shoe there?
Frost smiles victoriously.
I've got that little bit. And that proves that you were on that bus that night. Come on, talk to me, son.
I want to talk to me dad.
Oh. So it was you and your dad who attacked Harrison, was it?
You've got to be joking, Dad.
Oh, I didn't think it was.
Jack?
Yeah?
I just had a call. Marsh got uniform to check out the football club. They use half a dozen battery-powered lamps for their juniors, and one of them is broken.
They eye John.
Thank you, Sergeant. So it was you and Trusham, was it?
We didn't know about the girl. She wasn't supposed to be on the bus. It was Harrison. I just wanted to teach him a lesson.
Well, a lot of lessons have been learnt here today, haven't they?
Outside a gas pumping station, Tulin lets John out of his squad car.
Show me where you took them.
They're underground. It's dark.
She was in there, and Harrison over there.
They start searching.
What is this place?
It's a disused junction station, part of an old storage facility. We've been rerouting the gas mains across Denton for 2 years now.
Well, evidence that somebody's been in there. Empty water bottle, but nothing else.
Trusham must have stripped him. He's not here.
Well, where the bloody hell is he?
I don't know, honest. This is where we brought him, right here. Bob said he was going to let the girl go. He promised. Even before we learnt she was sick, he was really worried about her. He promised me we'd get some insulin for her.
Go on, take him away.
Officers take John away.
Must have thought that the boy wouldn't hold out, and he's moved them.
Underneath a sign reading lift engineer use only, gloved hands meddle with electrical controls inside a box. The man holds Harrison on the edge of a lift shaft.
Oh, my God, no.
Please, Jesus.
Don't kill me. Don't kill me.
You have to pay for what you did.
No, please, go. No. I didn't mean to hurt those people. I didn't mean to. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
The man places a pillowcase over Harrison's head. There's a noose around his neck. The man takes off his balaclava. It's Trusham. Outside the gas station...
Remember that metal name tag that we found on Jessica Green? Santola. Well, I did some research and I found there were two companies with that name. One was an earth-moving company, and the other one was a lift blanket supplier that went out of business 2 years ago. I mean, what is a lift blanket?
They're things they hook up to protect the inside of lifts.
Right. Well, we'll bear that in mind. Meanwhile, now let's just get back to this. What's that there?
That's the old Denton Equity Insurance building. That's in the middle of a brownfield site. We shut down a gas main there a few months ago because the whole site's due for redevelopment.
Let's have a look at that.
By the lift shaft in the abandoned building, Trusham takes out a tape recorder.
How did you kill them? Tell me. The steering failed. I swear! I tried to use my mobile. I couldn't get a signal. It cut off.
You took your eyes off the road!
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't see them. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. That's not enough.
Trusham shoves him over the side of the lift shaft. Squad cars drive up to the abandoned building. Trusham opens a window and spots them coming. He slowly backs away from the window as they park up. Officers get out along with Frost. They sprint into the building. Inside the building, Tresham walks down the stairs calmly. Frost and Tulin start to ascend the stairs from the bottom. Tresham stands and waits in a corner. Frost and Tulin meet him. Tresham smiles at them.
I'm surprised you found this place.
I was helped by a dying girl. Have you killed him?
I've got his confession on tape. It's called justice, Mr. Frost.
It's called murder if you've killed him.
Frost glances at the tape recorder.
All right, George, go on, take him away.
Tulin cuffs him and pulls him away. Frost stands there, the tape recorder in his hands. Marsh joins him.
No sign of Harrison down there.
No, not here. All right.
Shh. George, hold it a minute. He's up there. He's up there!
They rush up to the top of the lift shaft.
Oh. Thank God he's still alive. It's too far down. I'll tell you what, if I can get on that one, I can get to him.
It's okay, police. Don't move.
Harrison's on the roof of the lift. Frost and Marsh force open the other lift shaft door.
All right.
Jack.
Frost lowers himself in.
I don't think this is a good idea.
Frost climbs down the side of a second lift shaft adjacent to Harrison. He reaches the roof of the lift. He tests his weight on it, then steps out onto it. It starts to move and he falls. He peers over into the other shaft. The lift on the other side is slightly further down.
Mark! It's all right, Mark. Now, listen to me. Can you move?
I can't. It's my leg.
All right, take it easy. Take it easy, I'm going to come down to you. All right? Won't be a minute.
Frost stands.
Oh, bloody hell. How far down is it?
10 floors.
Tulin leads Tresham down the stairs.
It's a long way down. You want to get a lift?
Tulin nods and presses the button on one of the lifts.
Don't use the lift!
Frost glances about wildly, looking over to the other lift. He leaps down onto it.
It's all right, Mark. All right.
We'll have you out of here.
That one doesn't work.
We'll be all right now. Yeah.
Tresham presses the call button on the other lift. Frost is trying to remove the noose from Harrison's neck. The lift jerks into action and Frost grabs onto the side of the lift shaft as Harrison falls and is hanged on the noose. At the top of the lift, Marsh lifts her head abruptly to see the lift mechanism turning. She lowers her head, closes her eyes, and goes as white as a sheet. John heads out of the police station with his family in tow, just as Frost gets out of his car.
Go to prison, won't he?
Well, I've recommended bail, but the rest is not up to me.
If I hadn't said anything in the beginning, none of this would have happened.
No, you can't blame yourself. Tresham's been planning this for weeks. He just manipulated John to help him.
Well.
Andy waits by the car. Linda gives Frost a grateful nod and walks off. Frost goes in, shaking his head. Frost and Mullet walk up the stairs.
There ought to be a system in place where victims' families are told when people like Harrison are released.
Well, at least the girl survived.
Yeah, well, that's some sort of justice, I suppose.
Jack, you're back. They've caught up with the credit card thieves. £7,500 worth.
Oh, well, small change after what we've been through.
Yes. By the way, how did they get your PIN number?
Well, you see, I've got so many of the damn things that I,
You wrote them down and kept them in your wallet.
Frost's face falls and he gives a little nod. Malik gives him a disapproving look and marches off. Frost chuckles and shrugs. Toulon and Marsh are taking everything down in the incident room.
That's what I like to see. Order out of chaos.
You should never have gone into that lift shaft. You get results, Jack, but nothing's worth dying for.
That's what we do. Anyway, I had good backup. Thank you.
He smiles.
Yeah, well. I'm sorry about Harrison.
Yeah, well, we did our best. And as you say, we can't win them all. Anyway, I would just like to wish you luck in your new job. Annie.
He holds out his hand.
You still bend the rules, Jack. And one of these days, it will be your undoing.
Ignoring his outstretched hand, she sashays off.
Yes?
Toulon eyes him, then turns to the whiteboard and rubs off the words Green/Harrison investigation. Frost holds a mug and stares thoughtfully. He looks worn out. ITFC audio description.